since I actually had attended some of your shows, know of your company, and you know, I've seen companies launch there. I've had some of our companies do very, very well with those sorts of shows. I already would kind of move forward on this, knowing that this is established.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cashing Out, brought to you by Hoban Law. And with me again today is my co-host, Dina Gelbert from Align Business Advisory Services. Hey, Dina.
Hey, Dan.
Hey. Gina had to jump off last week, so we lost her last week for most of the call, but we got her back.
And as promised, or as I was hoping, I guess I should say versus promise, but as I hoped, we had a lot of really good conversations over the last week with folks who may have an interest. You know, it's a really interesting process, this phase of what I call marketing a business. You know, you have some folks who call you and they're super excited, and then there are others that you're chasing down and trying to coordinate. Hey, can we talk Tuesday? Nope. How about Friday? Or, oh no, now I want to have my colleague involved. And then you have to reschedule all over again. And, you know, the holidays certainly don't make that a lot more simple. So it's been a bit logistical, but we've had, despite all that, we've had a lot of really good, meaningful conversations. And I think we're grabbing the attention of the types of folks that we want to talk to.
You know, it's when you say that, I'm thinking, if it were the seller, if it were me making the calls to people, and there would be an appearance of desperation or of, you know, and it's so much nicer when you have an affiliate do it on your behalf, because then those extra phone calls, those extra emails, it doesn't come across as desperate. It comes across as efficient. And what do you mean? Why haven't you responded to my email? Why haven't you responded to, why didn't you return my phone call? I think it's a whole different, sets a different tone than when the owner is doing the same thing. Do you agree?
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does. And, you know, as any business owner, you have an emotional tie, you know, to your business, and especially in your case. And for the reasons we talked about in the why, you know, earlier, a couple episodes ago, and it's that emotional connection that makes it really hard to do outreach on your own, because you have a tendency to become more frustrated, and that those emotions resonate. They come through, or you're on a phone on a call with someone, and you let the sigh go accidentally because you're just tired of hearing them, you know, say something again, or go on a tangent, or talk about themselves, or, you know, what have you. And so that's the buffer we provide, and we do this every day all the time. And so, you know, we know how these conversations go. We structure them in a meaningful way to kind of cut right to it. And we also know how to break through. A lot of founders will say, oh, well, I just emailed, you know, the managing partner, or I just called so-and-so. And, well, sure, anyone can do that, I suppose, but there's a finesse and a way of breaking through that inbox and crafting a value statement in a way that it resonates with investors and acquirers, you know, kind of speaking their language, if you will. And if you don't, you know, if you don't speak that language every day, it's going to be difficult for you to break through. And so I like to think that we're able to do that on behalf of folks, and other advisors, much like ourselves, would be able to do that.
Well, you certainly make my life a lot easier. That's for sure. Well, let's get our investor bull on the phone. Let me see if I can get a hold of him right now. Nick?
Good afternoon. You able to hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you great, Nick. It's Dan Humison, and I have my co-host with me, Dina Gelbert.
Hello there.
Dan and Dina, nice to meet you here virtually. I'm standing pretty much on top of a 650-some-year-old bridge here in Prague, older than our whole country. So after three countries today, it's been nice to actually get a break here and see a beautiful city.
Prague is great. I spent some time there in college, and it's one of my favorite cities.
This is really cool, Nick. You're the furthest guest I've ever spoke to. Way to go.
Well, depending on the day, you know, it might be Hong Kong, Macau, Guam, Sri Lanka, South America. Yeah, today you got me pretty far out, so that's great.
This is cool. Everyone may remember Nick Easley, the CEO and manager director of Multiverse Capital. He was on episode, I think it was 30. And if you missed that show, you should go back and learn all about Multiverse, because, I mean, they're into everything. Obviously, Nick's all over the world. Well, let's jump into our deal. We'll assume that I've made it past the initial view. I'll let you take it away. This is your interview.
First thing I look at, I see, kind of go to what I know about this company. I went to one of the first shows at the Javits Center years ago, and, you know, having a a separate consulting company and doing a lot of license work. That was a time that New York had pretty much gone through their process already for the first licenses. I like New York for capital. I like New York for population and for the future potentiality of the industry. But to launch a show there in a market that really, I think, galvanized a lot of support, but not necessarily the traction of vendors, a lot of the local markets. I mean, you had Maine at that time. You had a couple other like smaller medical markets. It was, I like how they took a stance, like putting this in somewhere that's easy for people to fly and go to, but from a long-term reoccurring revenue standpoint, from a trade show standpoint, that market specifically might not have a lot of like vendor retention rates. Turnout, yes, and kind of great venue. And I think about the shows that then I attended in Los Angeles in the past, and then Los Angeles completely oversaturated industry term here, shit show of a market based on regulations and policies. Tons of interest, tons of history, but also lots of other shows that happen there. And then equally with Boston, I think, okay, what are the competitive advantages in each of these markets? You know, New York, for example, other than some smaller type shows like Women Grow events, networking events, there's not very many huge industry type events there. So that is unique. The Boston side from NECAN, from NCIA and their seed to sale shows, plus them having a robust medical market, definitely a good targeted East Coast kind of hub of the cannabis industry. And equally, even though LA is that shit show of regulation and policy, you have over 20 million people, you know, in this greater Los Angeles kind of area. So there's that traction. I then look at this as an ancillary business, you know, from a trade show standpoint. And I think about media, I think about trade shows, I think about what's the long-term scalability and really what's the exit potentiality of something like this, of either a merger acquisition, a total exit, you know, combining and doing some sort of like public offering. How are you going to provide the initial liquidity to your investors? And here it just looks like a total, you know, sell-off. So like you're hoping, you know, for an acquisition at this point. But then I think of what other shows from MJ Biz, what other shows, you know, that are out there from like ICBCs, the show a day mentality that so many other groups are getting into this. Would I think that is this in the top 10 of the market sector of this specific sector of like trade shows? You know, does it meet that parameter? Mm-hmm. What potential partnerships might exist with this show and three or four others to kind of roll those up, either give this offering value or to give future offerings value to start getting market share? Because you think, without the numbers being presented in front of me, what was your highest attendance trade show? And then let's look at, you know, sorry to set the benchmark a little high here, and then what was the trade show attendance of Las Vegas with MJ Biz last year? And then do you hope to be bought and part of them? Do you hope to be bought and part of other things? Or do you really plan on scaling this into a national, international congress businesses? And then what's the differentiating factor from your trade shows of any others, other than time in the market selected, that you're really going to create revenue here other than, you know, an operational company that's getting by, scaling, providing a lot of value to vendors and services, but not potentially providing copious amounts of liquidity to your investors?
Those are really good observations. Dina, do you have any questions for Nick?
So, Nick, when an opportunity like this that has some nuances or kind of non-traditional, as you point out, kind of governance in terms of conditions and structures, what is your kind of initial thought? Is it something that you immediately kind of put to the side, or would it be something that you would evaluate if it came across your desk? You know, kind of what's your thought logic as an investor?
Since I actually had attended some of your shows, know of your company, and, you know, I've seen companies launch there. I've had some of our companies do very, very well with those sorts of shows. I already would kind of move forward on this knowing that this is established. But one of my questions then, you know, when I think about like this sort of thing, I love the ancillary space because this sort of volume, traction from attendees, being able to like influence, you know, having additional potential revenue streams from, you know, magazines, from online advertisements, from, you know, tying in like podcast series, tying in other, this is like really media and events. So how much have you really looked into the media and event space, you know, in other markets, especially like emerging markets that then kind of followed certain patterns and trends? And how are you trying to emulate some of those trends or use past industry wisdom from other industries to really leverage, you know, this and what you've built into something that could be a part of something much greater? Because that scalability, like if I'm an investor and I give someone a dollar, I want to make $10, like, because I have risk there. And then since the cannabis industry, you're a little further insulated from it, where even if like the federal government changes policies or some states don't open up or more states open up, one way or another, it's going to be good for you. It's an anti-fragile investment strategy. If the industry gets worse, there's going to be more activism, more needs, more discussions. And then if the industry gets better and there's all these new states, new companies, new markets, like that's going to help you. And if the market just stays the same and grows at its current rates, you're still going to be good because you've made it this far. But if I want to know from what you need from, like I said, that ask is critical. Like we are valuing ourselves at X amount pre-value or pre-money, X amount post-money. This is the units. This is the ownership structure. I also want to know, like, what are the potential past liabilities? Because when you buy an asset or invest into an asset or do an acquisition, you buy the great intellectual property, you buy their marketing lists, you buy their potential contracts with like the event centers and like your vendor service providers. But then if there's toxic liabilities, like crazy partnership lawsuits or somebody slipped and fell in LA venue and there's this pending lawsuit, like that's always one. I want to know, like, what's the upside? Like, so in the ask, what's the potential downside? One, it's losing all my money. Two, since I own a company, I could get in trouble for the past things that they did. That's when I call it like a toxic asset. And the other reason to really push that ask, because if you don't, an investor sees, if they see something that's really good and they like, they also see a vulnerability that you don't necessarily understand who you are, what it is you do, and how you're doing it. Otherwise, you would know, you know, we did 1 million year one, 2 million year two, 4 million year three. You're trying to sell now. I'm like, okay, are they going to get 8 million by year four? Like if I'm buying in for 6 million or 8 million, like, am I going to get my money back this year? And then is that going to get to 16? And if so, what have you put in place to get me to 16?
I think one of the, as you have a little bit more time to examine the deck, one of the things you'll notice is that the partners that are going to continue to run it and stay on, the managing partners, they've been in the trade show industry for 40 plus years, and they've had some of the biggest shows that have ever existed. The PC Expo was their biggest one, which they sold for roughly $1 billion. They own the franchise show. They have a lifetime of experience in the trade show industry, and they have relationships with all the mainstream businesses that have exhibited in the past. So that's, you know, sort of always been the play of the trade show, is get ourselves in position, be in the right market, so that when mainstream comes in, whether it's through, most likely it'll be more on the hemp side of this, but as mainstream decides to come into the industry, I think we're in a great position to take advantage of that.
I couldn't agree more. And again, one of the things I did notice in the deck, sorry, I always look for like the potential things wrong first, because you can always find the great. But one of the main things that's important for me as an investor, especially like a venture capital and, you know, here this next quarter, private equity kind of hedge fund, like when I'm managing other people's capital that they worked hard for, I cannot lose that capital. I have to do everything in my power for how I choose that, manage that, buy, sell, invest into assets to make sure I'm not losing their money or, you know, potentially exposing the fund to risk. So at the end of the day, even as like a kid from farm country in Wisconsin, I think I'm giving you, your team, my capital. And do I trust that team based on their experience in this market or similar industries to know how to scale this sort of business with my capital? So at the end of the day, the most important thing for me, you know, I always look at his team. After that, it's all the unique advantages. And many of the things that I brought up here can always be discussed. So this is the sort, when I think about an ancillary investment in the cannabis industry with traction, scale, and market share, you know, it passes those initial criteria. And I do see, just like you said, when federal legalization, all these other policies are changing, this is definitely going to scale. And then the big, big, big shows in the world are going to be, you know, picking this sort of thing up. So I would definitely then kind of request additional information, and it would meet my initial criteria.
Okay. Well, Nick, we really appreciate you taking the time to review the deck and peel yourself away from beautiful Prague to talk to us. Dina, do you any last minute comments for Nick, or can we let him go?
No, I think we can let him go. I appreciate it. Enjoy your trip. It's an amazing place.
If only it was a vacation, but you know, initially I think you guys have done a great job with this, kind of putting together the offering. Now it's just understanding the terms, the conditions, and really understanding what is it you need to achieve your goals here.
Well, Nick, hopefully we'll have an opportunity to get you on another call, and maybe you'll be at another exotic location when we do it. Safe travels, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the opportunity. Wish you guys a great rest of your day.
Okay. Let me just do a little bit of business and thank one of our sponsors, Blaze, which is a cannabis technology company. They make software for dispensaries and distributors, and soon they'll be launching a new software for cultivation and manufacturing. Chris Violas is the CEO over there. He was on the MJ Bulls podcast a few episodes ago. Good guy. So if you're a dispensary or distributor and you're looking for software, check out Blaze. It's blaze.me, blaze.me. Okay. A lot of interesting observations from Nick. You know, as I said, Nick is a serious guy and you can tell he really studied the deck, and I feel good that he wants to take another look at it. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciated his feedback and how he kind of tuned in on specific data points that are meaningful to him. It's always nice to hear what are the areas that their eyes kind of laser into first, especially from my perspective. And every investor has different areas that they find kind of key that they always look to first. So it's interesting to hear from his perspective what those were for your particular deal, and you know, our high level pitch information, you know, what about that spoke to him and what about maybe gave him pause?
Like I said, it's always hard when people are asking you the hard questions, but the nice thing is he was at the shows. He knows exactly what we do. He's got a good feel for what we do, and I think he's got a good feel for where something like this can go, which is, you know, so much easier to when somebody kind of gets it than trying to explain it to them. That was the nice part about that. He gets it. He knows the business. So that was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it gave both perspectives, you know, someone who's attended and has experienced it personally, but then also his kind of arm's length investor view. So yeah, it was great feedback.
Yeah. Well, it was another good week. We have a busy, I mean, we'll be rolling into the holidays here, and that's going to mess us up a little bit in a good way. I mean, it'll give us a chance to catch our breath, but I'm afraid we probably won't have a lot of people looking at our deal because they'll be, as they should be, with their families and focusing on something more important. But before I go, I want to remind everyone, if they have any questions or comments, to email us at connect@mjbulls.com. And also, one last plug out for the music. My son does the music, Jamie Humiston. He's the one that composed the music. So if you like the music, let him know. His name is Jamie Humiston. So Dina, have a good week, and we will talk to you next week.